This is Adam Mundahl with State Air. We need people on radio willing to speak about the Bible, the Constitution, and putting God back in our nation again. So join me in sponsoring Chosen Generation and Pastor Greg. Call him today at 830-446-3624. That's 830-446-3624. This has blessed my business and it will bless yours. Thank you.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in. I know you have a choice where you can watch. And I thank you for keeping it tuned here. Let me see if I can get that to... Is that on? How would I get that? Ah, there we go. Okay, now it's off. Okie dokie. I think we're all right now. Let's see. Top right. There we go. I think we're okay now. I'm trying to do some minor adjusting to the screen, but there. Oh, yeah, that worked out perfect. Okay. All right. Well, welcome, Dr. David. Let me undo that mute. Okay. Welcome, Dr. David Wormser. Good to have you. You're muted. No, I've got... No, it's on me. Never mind. It's on me. There we go. All right.
Yeah. Can't tell you how many people are trying to do that.
Oh, you know, I'm telling you. All right. So I wanted to... There have been so many more horrific stories just that continue to come out of Israel. You and I talked about this a little bit, in the early days after this had happened, that one of the things that is ingrained in Judaism is not to talk about the dead, not to talk about these type of grotesque things. It's part of Orthodox Judaism to not give these things a place, if you will. Am I correct in that statement?
No, you're right. You're right. For example, we Jews don't have a viewing in a funeral or in a funeral home. The dead is, first of all, buried immediately within 24 hours unless it's Sabbath or something or a holiday. But and then you're not really allowed to show the body or the pieces. That's really a taboo. And it's also a double murder to the family. The family, of course, is horrified by seeing the image of its loved one over and over again and stuff like that. They can never bring it to closure, and closure in Judaism when somebody dies. That's why the burial is immediate, and then you have a 7-day mourning period. It's to really drive home the point that it's he's gone. And the reason why is that you have to be hit with it like a freight train, which triggers a complete release of all the emotions you would have by losing somebody. But then that's essential to getting over it. I mean, this is the whole process of Jewish mourning.
Right.
But the problem is, if your loved one keeps showing up on TV, being tortured, killed, wounded, it never allows closure. Yeah. And it's just horrifying. But that's necessary on some level in order to show the world and remind the world why this war is happening.
Well, it's because they keep brushing it aside and pretending as though none of it ever happened.
None of it never happened. And then the second of all, this proclivity, especially in this administration, of trying to create moral equivalence and, well, they did. It's a very crisp moral circumstance that happened on October 7th. There was an invasion against all agreements and everything. There was an invasion of Israel with the most horrific crimes being done. And the Israelis are trying to fight back to destroy those who did it. But the problem they have is that the people who did it are using their population as a human shield. And they are not only hiding in their houses, but they've built an entire world, a whole city underground, the likes of which the world has never seen, to fight from, while above ground, the civilians are the human shield. So the Israelis are doing their best. From everything we're hearing, whether it's the head of urban warfare at West Point, who's examined this and been on the ground, or Jack Kemp, who was head of special forces for the British military, or now even General Petraeus, who've been on the ground there in the last week, all of which are saying the same thing, which is that the Israelis have done an unbelievable job fighting in a circumstance that is probably the worst urban circumstance ever faced by a Western military. And they're doing it with actually the lowest civilian to combat casualty ratio ever in history. And that's using Hamas numbers, which more and more is coming out that these numbers we hear of 30,000 are completely fabricated. So on every level, you know, one really has to step back, and the imagery and the covering up and the ignoring and the erasing of what happened on October 7th, the whole context of the war has been flipped upside down. And it's now all about the Palestinian innocents who are being killed. And in this, I have to say, I think it is something this administration has done to some extent deliberately, or at least its staffers have done deliberately, because they were always uncomfortable with siding with Israel in this war.
It is really stunning, the stories that they keep coming up with. They continue to call Israel the oppressor. They continue to put out all kinds of statistics about Israeli genocide of people living in Gaza. And yet, my understanding is the realities of this are, I mean, this is, and there's even now, Arab Muslims that are coming out and making videos to refute what these people are saying, that are saying, you know, Israel's who gave me a chance. There was one gal who's a model who came out talking about how, you know, if it hadn't been for Israel, she would have been living under this Hamas repressive regime.
We are seeing a lot of Israeli Arabs, and Israel is about 18% Arab Muslim. We've seen a lot of them come out and say, listen, this is our country. We were under attack too. Mm-hmm. You see Bedouin. They're actually Bedouin. Bedouin are nomadic Arabs, Muslims, that live in the south of Israel. They're the real Arabs. It's what we imagine as Arabs, you know, with the camels right. and the caravans and so forth. Israel's army has Bedouin units. And the Israelis are trying to keep, they put them on the northern border rather than the southern border because they're afraid of what the Bedouins are going to do to the Palestinians. They hate them. And Bedouins were killed on October 7th. Bedouins were in the area that Hamas took that morning, and they killed them. They were brutal to these Muslims. So there's a score to settle by the Bedouins. So there are Arabs in Israel. They are quite successful. About 30% of all of Israel's medical doctors are Arabs. It's a highly educated community. About 30 to 40% of all Israeli universities now are populated by Arab students. So they're fully integrated, and they're actually succeeding greatly. And many of them are beginning to come out, like you said, and say, listen, this is not us, please.
Right.
We're on behalf of, we're in it with the Israelis.
Well, and to refute the lies that are being propagated, you know, by all of this, I had posted a post that said this, and then I want to talk to you about China, but Jews and Christians are commanded, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not covet, steal, or murder. Islam teaches to lie to infidels to advance the cause of Islam, gain an advantage over your enemy that you might subjugate them or kill them. Raping the women is the fruit of subjugation. And this is from Ishaq 587. Our onslaught will not be a weak, faltering affair. We shall fight as long as we live. We will fight until you turn to Islam, humbly seeking refuge. We will fight not caring whom we meet. We will fight whether we destroy ancient holdings or newly gotten gains. We have cut off every opponent's nose and ears with our swords. We have driven them violently before us as the command of Allah and Islam. We will fight until our religion is established, and we will plunder them, for they must suffer disgrace. Quran 8:93, and a declaration from Allah and his messenger to all mankind. Allah is free from all treaty obligations with non-Muslims, and so is his messenger. Bukhari 4:288, expel disbelievers from the Arabian Peninsula. Quran 2:191, slay them wherever you find them and catch them and drive them out from where they have turned you out, for persecution and oppression are worse than slaughter. And finally, Tabari 9:69, He who believes in Allah and his messenger has protected his life and possessions from us. As for those who disbelieve, we will fight them forever in the cause of Allah. Killing them is a small matter to us. You can't make peace with that, David.
No, you can't. You can't. And unfortunately, what you quote there is it. I mean, it is enshrined. There is a sort of tribal law that has authority also in Islam, and you could have some Muslims who say, listen, for the sake of the community, for the sake of the welfare of everybody, we can, you know, we're focused on the tribal welfare and we can make peace or something, but you cannot make peace with that. And unfortunately, you know, as bad as October 7th was, it isn't entirely unique.
Right.
Yazidi girls were taken. This is only a decade ago in Iraq. Yazidi girls were taken by ISIS. 3,000 of them were brought into sex slavery. Other thousands were killed, mutilated the same way the Israelis were, the Israeli women and men and so forth were. This goes back. You say, well, okay, the brutalization of colonialism in the West and blah, blah, blah. 1829, either 1829 or 1832, somebody needs to check up on my dates. But at any rate, 100 and almost 200 years ago, in Safed, the mystical city in northern Israel, there was a Muslim community, a Jewish community, and there was a massacre of the Jews, and exactly the same thing. You could literally look at the film of the slaughter of Israelis that the Israeli government has, the 47-minute film, and see what they did to the Israeli women on October 7th. And that is an exact description of what happened in 1834 to the Jewish, or 1829 to the Jewish community of Tzfat, including selling into sex slavery. Again, it happened over and over and over again, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Syria, whether it's against Christians, whether it's against Jews. The Armenian genocide, similar stories emerged. And then you have Hebron. You know, people forget there was a very large Jewish community in Hebron in 1929 until it was literally massacred out of existence that day. This is unfortunately part of the Islamic way of war, and it has been consistently. And we can ignore that, or we can say that's not politically correct, but we have to come to terms with that.
Well, there was another report that I had seen just recently that just in recent days, three terrorists had managed to get into, I guess it was Tel Aviv, and they stopped in the middle of traffic, and they killed three Israelis. They got out of their vehicle and just started shooting in the middle of the traffic.
Quite true. Yes, it was in the suburbs of Jerusalem, and yes, you're right. It was in the center of the heart of Israel, and they just normal traffic jam in the morning on a highway, and they just got out in the car and started shooting up everybody, and three were killed. Look, this is ongoing. We hear this whole thing about Ramadan and peace as if it's some month long Christmas of peace and goodwill of men on earth, and what you see is tonight. The Israeli government captured a terrorist on his way tonight, and it's the beginning of Ramadan tonight, Christmas Eve, so to speak, Yom Kippur Eve. On his way to Tel Aviv, he had mass amounts of explosives and lots of firearms. He was on his way for a mass casualty attack in Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. So that tells you exactly what Ramadan means, unfortunately. It is not a time of peace. Many Islamic attacks on Muslims have been launched on Ramadan. Islam is not a religion of peace. It doesn't value peace other than in absolute victory.
Let's talk now about China and Iran and the significance of that. You talked about the Admiralty and the high seas when you were on last week, but let's revisit that for a minute and talk about what it means that China has entered into basically protecting Iran and the Houthis and Iranian assets.
Well, one is they signed a strategic agreement a couple of years ago with Iran that helped fund Iran and protect Iran. But that's sort of a foundation. What they're doing now is exactly what you focused on right now, which is they're entering the United States has always been, ever since our creation, because we're a mercantile nation, a nation of industry and trade, essentially an island, even though we're a continent, we behave like an island. So our Navy is our access to the world and our way of life. So since the beginning of the American Republic, the Navy has been the fundamental mission of our armed forces to protect the high seas for American merchant traffic. What's happened is 20% of the world's traffic went through the Straits of Bab el-Mandeb, through the Suez Canal, the Red Sea, is cut now by the Houthi terrorists, and we're not protecting that. I mean, we're shooting down missiles when they're shot at ships, but we're not going on the offensive to end this problem. So that waterway now is shut down. And along comes China and says, listen, if you register with us and you work with us as a Navy, the Houthis have an agreement with us. They won't attack your ship. Now, Israel, sorry, you're not part of this. The United States, sorry, you're not part of this. So your ships are going to be hit. But anybody else in the world can come to an agreement with China, which has a deal with the Houthis, to provide safe passage of their ships through this canal, through this area and up to the canal. So in essence, China has leveraged its relationship and its protection of the Iranian world in order to essentially blackmail the world into forcing it under its protection. And of course, China, when it extends an umbrella of protection, it comes with not a string attached, but 20,000 ropes attached. And that's what we're seeing. So China is essentially stealing from the United States its high seas role and subordinating world maritime traffic to its will. That's a strategic defeat of the highest levels to the United States, and it fits with the overall punting to China that this administration has done.
So the Red Sea, I wanted to try to see if I can, I think I can do it this way. I'm going to do a share screen here. And bring that up.
There you go.
Wait a minute. What do you mean remove the layer? I don't see the layer. There we go. Okay. So this is the Red Sea for those that are watching us right now. But this is the Red Sea on the backside of Saudi Arabia, and it is down to the south of the Mediterranean Sea. So if you were, as we look at this map of Israel, you see the Mediterranean Sea identified here. So on the back side of this, if we imagine the connectivity, and then I'll bring this up, and then you'll see. So this is that Mediterranean Sea up here. And on the backside of that is the Red Sea, and this is the canal that you're talking about, which is between the waterway between Egypt and Israel, correct?
Absolutely. I learned, first thing they taught me when I was doing naval strategy in the Navy was think of water like land and land like water. Invert it, like a negative image.
Right.
And then think about what you need to walk through. And all of a sudden, you begin to realize how thin and precarious some of these passages are. The other way to think of it is the connection of Asia to Africa. Everything, it's the divide between Asia and Africa, and therefore it's also the connection between Asia and Africa, and Asia water to Europe flows through there. So everything that goes from Asia to Europe, everything that goes from Asia to Africa in the northern part of Africa or the eastern part of western part of Africa,
right,
flows through. That's why it is one of the most important waterways in the world. And where Yemen is at the bottom tip, cutting it off way at the bottom.
Right.
And that's and you know, you're talking not even Yemen. We're talking about a rebel group in Yemen that the Saudis had essentially defeated and were marching on their ports to take them under the end of the Obama administration. And tell me if this doesn't sound familiar with Gaza. We were so worried about the humanitarian crisis that would happen in the Houthi areas that we forced the Saudis to withdraw from Hodeidah and Mocha ports and to allow the Houthis to control them so that they could be used for humanitarian resupply to the Houthi areas. And lo and behold, there's still starvation. They didn't care about their own people. The opposite. They love the propaganda of having starving Houthis because they blame it on the West. They blame it on the Saudis. They blame it on everybody else. So they don't care if their people starve. What they do care about is that they now have access to those ports. And those ports have become the foundation of the closing of the Straits of Bab el-Mandeb in the southern Red Sea. So here is a direct link between an ill-advised policy by the Obama administration to come down on Saudi Arabia, to force them to withdraw from the ports in Yemen during the civil war there, and to allow our enemy to take control of it, an organization that we call now a terrorist organization.
Right.
The Biden administration tried to uncall it that. It's apparently now reversed that in the last few weeks. We sided with a terrorist organization for humanitarian concern to allow its access and control over ports that then it used to import weaponry from Iran and to launch weaponry against Western shipping or shipping in the passage to the Suez Canal. Exactly what we're falling into in Gaza as well.
One final question with regards to the situation with Prime Minister Netanyahu. There was a statement that he was asked apparently whether or not the United States was retarding Israel's efforts in Gaza, to which there was a quote that he said, no, you know, that's not happening. But we know that, I mean, you and I've talked about that. We know that there is that going on. Yeah. Is it a political maneuver on his part to try not to create so much animus with D.C.
He said he is going into Gaza. What it isn't is what happened was first you had Kamala Harris get out there and say we differentiate between the Israeli government and the Israeli people, i.e. the Israeli government are these crazy extremists who don't want peace, who want war. This is Netanyahu's war. And the Israeli people now want a deal on the hostages. They want a ceasefire. They want a Palestinian state. They want to end this, and they want to come to terms with the Palestinians. So that's what's behind Kamala Harris's statement that the Israeli government is not the same as the Israeli people, and we have good terms with the Israeli people and support the Israeli people, but not the Israeli government. Then you had a much more aggressive statement by President Biden, both a little bit in the State of the Union, but more afterwards in an MSNBC interview that he gave the day after the State of the Union, where he said straight out that he believes that Prime Minister Netanyahu does not serve the interests of the Israeli people, which is an interesting statement against a fellow democracy that has an elected government, and that he thinks that actually Prime Minister Netanyahu is harming Israel and is harming its ability to fight and win this war. And then he also said that it's an absolute red line for the United States that Israel not go into Rafah, which for all intents and purposes means that Hamas would continue to control at the end of the war,
right,
a quarter of Gaza and still have its state and its ability to attack again. So Prime Minister Netanyahu was asked about all these statements coming from Washington. And he said, listen, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what they mean. First of all, we're going to do Rafah. We're going to do Rafah because we got to prevent another October 7th, and it can't do that if Hamas still is the government of Gaza,
right,
at the end of it or any part of it. So Rafah is an absolute, has to happen. The second thing he said is, and I don't understand, this is not my war. Everything I'm doing, 80% of the Israeli people support.
Right.
Whether it's going all the way to victory, whether it's going into Rafah, whether it's rejecting the idea of a Palestinian state right now, that on every single level, Netanyahu, if anything, is to the center left of his people right now. Yeah. So he was basically saying, no, you're wrong to the American government. But this is a tension building. This is a very dangerous tension building because Hamas is watching this and they're getting great encouragement. It's self-defeating for the United States. We want a hostage deal. Now Hamas says we don't need a hostage deal. The Americans are coming around to our position anyway without one.
And David, and we'll close with this, but this goes directly back to all of the upheaval. It goes back to the Biden administration's interference in the Israeli election, trying to make sure Netanyahu did not get into power. It goes to the Biden administration's efforts to support the opposition party and all of those protests that were going on prior to the October 7th invasion that took place by Hamas in Gaza. And the support of this administration for all of that upheaval that was going on, they were backing it 100%, trying to topple the conservative Netanyahu coalition that the people of Israel themselves had voted into power.
That's right. And it goes back to Biden. I mean, Trump administration stopped that all, of course. But in 2015, they created an organization called V15. To try to defeat Prime Minister Netanyahu at the polls. They actually funded with American money political campaigns in Israel in that election in 2015 to try to defeat Netanyahu, the overt interference with American taxpayer dollars in a fellow democracy. And of course, they were defeated, as they were defeated again in 2021, 2022. They don't understand Israeli politics, apparently. But it's not for want of trying.
Hear, hear. David, thanks for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it. Always a joy to have you. We'll have this interview posted as well so you can rewatch it once again. Rick Manning joins me on the other side. We're going to talk about the State of the Union. And we'll also get into, I'm going to play you a video of a rancher talking about what's happening to our beef supply in the United States. They're going to try to kill all the cattle. They're going to try to end the beef supply in the United States, and they just got the funding to put in the RFID chips in all the cows across the country so they can track them and kill them. Serious. Back after this.
Okay. So up next.
Good.
And we're all off air.
Great. All right. Thank you, Pastor. Hi, Rick.
So up next, we have Clean Slate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. Clean Slate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your Clean Slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your Clean Slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Did you know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make
and
a tax-deductible donation.
Radio,
now
back
no
to
Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
Is filtered through biblical glasses. And let me get Mr. Rick Manning up on the screen. There he is. Hey, Rick, welcome aboard. Hang on, let me get this other screen up and running, and boom, there you are. Now you're everywhere.
I'm everywhere. I'm like Sabre Fair. I am everywhere.
There you go. There you go. Welcome. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a, you know, so much going on. It's a lot to talk about here for the last half hour of the show.
No doubt. All right, so let me throw this up. We'll get into this, but I'm going to play this, and then we will, let me make sure that it's going, yeah, it's going to go over everywhere. All right, here we go.
So earlier this week, the House passed a scale-down spending bill. Hidden within that bill, the lobbyists received $15 million to implement electronic tracking in the United States cattle. These electronic tracking devices are called RFID chips. They're implemented into the cow's ear, and they're allowed to track where your cattle are at, what they're doing, and how many cows you have on your farm. Now, these chips have been used for years. Cattle ranchers can put them in their cows if they want to, but now they're trying to make them mandatory for the United States. And I'm fully against this. I do not want mandatory tracking chips in my cattle. I'm curious to see what you all think about this. Let me know in the comments.
All right. We can talk about that. I mean, you know, they just had the big fires up in northern Texas, and I don't know if you saw any of the results of any of that, but
No, I did. It was disastrous for so many cattle killed. I think three people died, but it just destroyed thousands of acres that are rangeland that you could run cattle on, and you know, the cattle died, but you can't replace them because it doesn't have it won't have food on it for a year or two. So
And two of the largest poultry manufacturing, egg and chicken manufacturing plants in the country were up in the panhandle that were destroyed as well.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. It's not surprising, but I don't know that. I didn't know that. No, we have the one thing America has been able to do consistently is feed our people. And that is under attack. And whether or not the fires in Texas were, let's say, natural causes, it still has an impact. But the truth is the Biden administration policy is anti-food. It's anti-protein. It's anti-cattle based upon methane production and a false premise that cattle are the reason why we have global warming. So they're anti-cattle because of that. And it's unfathomable that they would then, you know, seek to end the cattle industry in America. But the truth of the matter is everything they're doing is designed to make it more difficult to raise cattle. And it is we're shipping a lot of our processing companies overseas. So we actually have to ship, in the case of pork, pigs and chickens in many cases overseas to have them processed, and which means killed and then sent back. It's not enough to become energy dependent again. They want us to be food dependent.
Well, they're going after, you know, all of this food. The RFID chips basically gives them the ability to be able to control the cattle population. I mean, you stop and think about it. If they know where all the cattle are, then they know how to go out and kill them. And I'm sure that within that RFID, you know, product, it wouldn't be too difficult to put enough of a jolt in the chip that if they pop the button, you kill the cow.
I don't know what the capacities are of it, because this is actually the first time I've heard about the RFID chip being in cattle. But the fact of the matter is, it gives them the only reason you want to have knowledge where all the cattle are and how many there are is if you plan to control that population. It is similar to the old argument related to registration of guns. They used to always say, well, we don't really want to do anything. We just want to know, you know, have guns registered so we know which guns are out there. Well, the fact is, the only reason you had registration of guns was to be able to know who had them and to be able to go and take them later on.
Yep.
And similarly, there's no reason to register cattle and have them electronically chipped so you can track their movement at all times if you're not looking to actually use that information. And it is disappointing that in trade-offs that occurred, that the cattle industry apparently must have signed off on this, because I can't imagine the Western senators, Senator Barrasso and others, agreeing to these provisions if the cattle industry and if the National Cattlemen's Association, Beef Cattle Association, had not signed off on the chipping. And if they did, you know, that's not very wise.
No, not even close.
There's actually another reason for it. I just thought of it.
Okay.
National Beef Cattle Association is essentially a creation of a tax. I know this. I used to work in that area. The tax is every cattleman has to pay a quote unquote voluntary tax into the government, which then gets distributed to the National Beef Cattle Association to promote the interests of the beef cattle industry. And so if you chip all the animals, then they are able to accurately tax the people who are running cattle and increase effectively increase the revenues for the promotion organization. Think of it like, you know, they used to have the milk people had the Got Milk campaign with the milk mustache. Well, that's because the dairy people got together. They pay a voluntary tax. They have an organization to promote milk. Well, National Beef Cattle Association is an organization to promote meat and cattle production. So that may be the rationalization for the RFID chip. But you and I know the actual implementation and the use of it is going to be destructive, and it allows for the federal government to implement the policy of ending cattle as a meat source in America under the guise of global warming.
Following the logic of what you just said, which makes a lot of sense, here's the other side to that. And this is why we fight, for example, down here in Texas, we fight property taxes. Because what property tax does is it takes these retired folks, retired military, retired others, who are on a set income, who watch their property taxes reach a point where they're quote unquote paid off property with the bank, is no longer paying off because they can't afford the property taxes. And then you have the government coming in and seizing the property. So theoretically speaking, then, if you start being able to tax these herds of cattle at a rate that the rancher can't afford to pay the taxes, then you essentially come in and the government seizes the herd.
The way that it works out, I want to talk about the property tax for a second, but the way that it works is that the cattlemen actually tax themselves. Okay, so they determine what the tax is, not the government, based on what budget they want their association to have. But ultimately, if the government knows where they are, where the herds are, it makes it so. Let's say they want to have a restriction on the number of cattle being run on federal lands. They will know exactly how many cattle are on federal lands. If you don't have chips, they don't know how many cattle are being run, and they can't enforce the restriction. So that's how they'll do it. They'll restrict the amount, number of cattle that can be run on federal lands to the level that it no longer makes economic sense to run cattle on federal lands, which takes a lot of the grazing land away and, in effect, then shrinks the capacity of the United States. So where the only people who will be able to afford U.S. beef will be people who can afford very expensive wines. So that would be, I think, more likely the way that you'd use it. But in terms of property tax, you're exactly right. We have this notion that we own our property. We have this notion that we own land, that private property is important. But let me just be clear. You don't own your land. The government owns your land. And the government owns your land because when you don't have, once you pay the bank off, the government can still take your land because you didn't pay your property tax. You missed it and you end up with a lien against it. Then they come in and they confiscate your land and they sell it for pennies on the dollar to other people at a big profit. And a Supreme Court case just ruled that if they do that, they now have to give you the profit, which is came down this session, which is a good thing. But the fact of the matter is they're still selling your property. And so getting rid of property tax, and I love Grover Norquist in terms of the whole cutting income tax. He's going around the nation pressing for states to zero out their income tax the way Texas has. But the truth of the matter is I would far prefer to pay an income tax than a property tax. Because a property tax tells you that you don't own private property and that there is no private property in America.
Yep.
We have to end the property tax first because it's the property tax that confiscates people's property. The second thing, the thing in the short term that can be done, Pastor Greg, is Texas just passed 11, 12, 13 initiatives. Texas needs to model Proposition 13 from California. What you described as a situation in terms of people's property appreciating and the property taxes assessments going up. And so the property tax is going up because property tax rate doesn't have to go up. If your assessment goes up, how much they say your property is worth, even though you're not selling it, that's how they then raise property taxes without ever raising the rate. We had that happening in California in the 70s.
Yeah.
And the people rose up and they passed and they put an initiative on the ballot called Prop 13.
Yep.
And we passed it. And for the past 50 years, 45 years, the Democrats in government have been trying to, in California, have been trying to eliminate Prop 13. It's the only tax they can't raise.
Yep.
And it's a great model. It froze the values.
Investment. Yeah. My mom still, well, she benefited from it. Because she didn't sell her house, and then when she did sell her house, you were still able to grandfather over per se.
You can grandfather to a relative, to somebody who's a relative.
Yeah.
And so it's for instance, when my mother-in-law passed away, before she passed away, I bought her house to give her some more income.
Uh-huh.
And so I bought her house. And then when she passed away, I did not get a higher property tax assessment as a result of that. So I carried her property her base property line assessment with me. I would encourage every state that has an initiative capacity to take a look at Prop 13. It works. Uh-huh. It's actually something from California that's worth exporting.
Was also passed back when the Republicans still had a voice.
Yes, it did. But
just saying.
So, yeah, I understand that.
All right.
But there's a group that you can contact who's well-versed in this and can get you the language. It's called the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association. Mm-hmm. That's the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association. They're based in Los Angeles. And I am confident that if anybody's interested in getting that started in your state, call them up. They can provide you with all the information you need and go to it. Ending the property tax is much more important than lowering the income tax, because they steal your property. Yep. If you don't pay.
Yep.
If you don't pay the property tax, we have to end that. Private property has to be inviolable in this country.
Hear, hear. I agree with you. There, that one. That's better. All right.
Okay.
That's because that's what the rhinos say. All right. Let's.
No, rhinos say this.
Yeah. We got about 6 minutes left. Let's get into the State of the Union. I have to be honest, I didn't watch it, so I'm not gonna be able to have a debate. You know, but I want to hear your thoughts on it, and I'm sure that you watched as much as you could stomach, which probably had to be the whole thing.
I did watch as much as I could stomach. First of all, anybody who has any doubt that there's a battle for the soul of America needs to watch the first minute and a half. Just watch the first minute and a half. If you don't watch anything else, watch the first minute and a half. Because he lays out that there are domestic and enemies, foreign and domestic. The enemies that are foreign are, you know, he might not define them the same way you do, because we switch sides in the battle in Israel, as David Wormser and Pastor Greg talked about it in the previous segment.
Yeah.
But so I'm not sure who he thinks are the battles for the enemies born, but the domestic enemies are you and me. He made that absolutely clear.
Yeah.
And so when they talk about, you know, we have a battle to fight, blah, blah, blah. When you talk about the, we're outraged at things like the censorship, the platforms knocking us off, the Department of Homeland Security being able to tell platforms that they shouldn't be using, you know, carrying content or should be blocking content. Pastor Greg getting booted off a number of different platforms over the past few years because his content was too hot to handle for them. There was too much truth. That's a, you know, that is a effort by the U.S. government to suppress thought.
Yeah.
And understand, every time we give them more power to do that, they're using it against us, because the thought they need to suppress is the thought that was the predominant majority opinion in this country for 230 years. Until we decided to have a fundamental transformation by Barack Obama in 2008, at which point we now have a push against that. So, yeah, we have a battle for the soul of America. Joe Biden defined it. In terms of some of the other things in it, what I find most interesting, and everybody wants to talk about the yelling, but you saw classic Bidenomics, where he complained about the size of candy bars and how many chips are in a bag under the guise that this is somehow, you know, the corporation's fault. Here's the truth. The reason you have fewer chips in the bag is because you have a problem where there may be, you know, they have to cost money.
Yeah.
There's fewer chips in the bag is the way they're dealing with Bidenflation.
Yeah.
And you have a choice. You can put two fewer chips in the bag, or you can raise the price. And I say, I don't want to raise the price. I want people to buy my chips. And by keeping the price lower, I've got more customers. So they put two fewer chips in the bag. That is a direct result of the inflation that Biden brought on our backs. And corporations can either raise prices, or they can lower the quality or quantity. And so just understand, every time he talks about that, every time he mentions it, he's actually pointing a finger at himself because he's the reason why there are fewer chips in the bag. The fact that he spent the State of the Union address talking about how many chips are in the chip bag and how big the Milky Way bar is pretty instructive about how out of touch he is and how few answers he has about the economy. But people need to understand that fewer chips in the bag is because of inflation, the inflation that Joe Biden brought on this country.
You mentioned something else, too, in the break about, concerns about the furtherance of the direction that he was taking the country through what he said in the State of the Union address, and the idea that perhaps they think that they are going to, that 2024 is going to be a messy election for them, so they're doing as much damage as they possibly can between now and then. Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I'll use transgender policy for one.
Okay.
You know, they are accelerating. In fact, they finalized a rule that makes it illegal for a school that receives public funds to not open their bathrooms to boys' and or girls' bathrooms. They took away the rights of men on college campuses who were accused of sexual assault or some kind of sexual harassment. They took away the rights of innocent until proven guilty with those regulations. So what they're doing is they're every single crazy thing they want to do, they're accelerating them. This push to destroy Israel, mm-hmm. in terms of saying that Israel, there's a red line to go into Ramallah, even though it was, we agreed on October 8th that they have to wipe out Hamas. Well, that's where Hamas is.
Right.
Our government convinced Egypt not to allow Hamas to head over the southern border to get out.
Well, and the day of or the day after Biden's so to address was when you had terrorists in Jerusalem standing in the middle of traffic, jump out of the car and turn automatic weapons loose on the people that were stuck in traffic over in Jerusalem. I mean, he's giving green lights to our enemies to act. All right, we're out of time. Looks like Rick got frozen. He'll be back with me again next week. I'll be back with you on Wednesday. Please be praying for our friends in India as they have come under extreme persecution there by both Hindus and Sikhs who have threatened the lives of the members of our ministry over there. We don't know the exact who, but we have received verifiable evidence that they had intended to attack, predicated on us and the effectiveness of the gospel message. But don't forget, no matter what the enemy throws at us, at the end of the day, we will stand for truth.
At the end of the day, when I stand before my God, I do not want him to ask me, "What did you do with the world that I sent my son to die for and redeem? How did you fight the good fight to share the good news and keep evil in check? How did you shine your light and be a beacon of truth in the darkness? Did you shrink back in fear when they demanded you change my message? Did you call evil good and good evil? Did you forsake my love for that of another, lying with the adulterer and setting up a new idol in your life? Have you defiled yourself through compromise and tolerance of that which I call an abomination? Have you innocent blood on your hands for the children murdered on your watch and the young ones perverted in their way by evil men seeking their own comfort and reviling me? No. At the end of the day, I want him to simply say the evidence is in. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. I love my God and I love his creation. And I will go to my grave telling the world that evil is evil and only God is good. And Jesus came to save the world. That no matter the evil in the world, I will never give up. And in spite of the hate, I will love in truth. God bless you all, and may love remove the veil so you all might enter into his rest.